evening, everyone, and welcome to this Sunday's special edition of English Evening. This is Dong Ying. On Sunday's show, we'll pick up some topics we had on weekday shows and recap them. Now let's take a listen. Kind of how to, release stress. Stress by waiting for your computer to update information or download photos, music, or videos. You could be suffering from this kind of a syndrome, which is hourglass syndrome. A survey commissioned by Intel shows that 66% of computer users are at least somewhat stressed by slow-paced technology, and 23% describe themselves as very and extremely stressed. And it said, we found that 41% of adults said they are waiting for the computer to catch up with them, and they are stressing out while waiting. Yeah, do you have this kind of syndrome, Paul?
Oh, quite often. I haven't got the most up-to-date computer. Well, it's only a year old. However, you know, depending on what you're searching for, it can be frustrating. You're tapping your toes and, well, I mean, what I do is I make sure that I have other things that I can do when I'm waiting maybe for something to download or to come onto the screen. According to this person, this lady from Intel, she was saying that this so-called hourglass syndrome, which is a collective term for the frustration that stressed computer users are facing as they watch the little hourglass spin while waiting for the program to open or website to download. She says that in an extreme case, 4% of users said they had to wait 1 to 3 hours for the computer to catch up with them. And that would create stress for anybody. I mean, surely you could go out and earn some money in those 2 or 3 hours and then have enough money to buy a new computer.
在现代社会呢，人们的生活呢变得越来越紧凑，时间呢越来越有限。像这个 topic 里面举的例子呢，就是在你打开电脑的时候，比方说你想下载一些新闻，想下载一些音乐、视频，还有这个照片的话呢，有的时候呢你会非常的焦虑，因为下载的时间你觉得是过长。那科学家们给出的这样的一个结论就是，你可能患上了这个叫沙漏综合症的 hourglass syndrome， 就是呢，对于在等待下载的过程当中非常的不耐心。我觉得这就像很多人在开车的时候，前面如果有人开车非常慢的话，就在后面不停的按喇叭。So this kind of a syndrome, I think, when you drive a car and the car in front of you is very slow, then you horn them to drive fast.
And I suppose if you're in a traffic queue, there's very little that you can do to pass the time apart from wait, so you're not using your time very constructively. According to the findings of this Harris poll for Intel, conducted amongst over 2,000 people in the United States, the average computer user spends about 13 minutes a day waiting for their technology to catch up with them, and that equates as equal to 3 days a year just waiting, according to Intel. But you mentioned waiting in car queues. I wonder how much, how many minutes a day and how many hours a year people have to wait in car queues. There must be some way of using technology to do something whilst you're just waiting. I suppose some people just use their mobile phones, don't they, when they're in the car?
Maybe. You can open more, pages when you're waiting for the download, or read a book, or do anything else. Okay.
I think you can do that. And the problem seems to be that if you don't update, get a new computer and keep up with the software and the new developments, if you're trying to do too much, there's various video and music websites and people, consumers, they're using computers more applications than they did even a few years ago. So if you've got an aging computer, it can't keep pace as quickly as the owners would like. So this is what causes the stress and frustration. But don't kick your computer. Don't smash the screen. That won't help.
So speaking of stress, there's another kind of stress which is related to your family tree. Researching the family tree may seem an innocuous exercise in understanding your history. A new study revealed that people researching their family history often open a Pandora box secrets that can unsettle and offend relatives, sometimes permanently damaging relations. Serious, huh?
More and more people in Britain and America are interested in researching their family tree. It's something which has been made more possible by the internet and according to University of Warwick in England, a professor there, Professor Kramer, she was telling the British Sociological Association's annual conference recently that of 224 people who gave her details of the family history research, around 30 mentioned conflict. So this is something which, you know, people have to be ready for. They must expect that, okay, it's interesting to find out as far back as you can details of the history of your family, the previous generations, but just be careful that you're not going to, you know, open up, find skeletons in the cupboard. What are the main causes of possible conflict? Well, uncovering unwelcome information, wanting information from relatives who didn't want to give it, giving relatives inaccurate information, spending more time researching than with loved ones. Oh dear, so you know, you're not spending time with the people who really matter, and you possibly could come in contact with hostile relatives, people who don't want to know you. You know, some families split up because you know, they just don't get on well.
那最近呢，在英国有这样一项调查显示，两个人谈恋爱啊，或者是跟别人交朋友的时候呢，可能会查这个人的这个家谱或者是家庭关系，但是这个新的调查显示呢，这种这个调查别人家庭背景的这种方式呢，有可能呢会有损你们的这个朋友关系或者是亲戚关系，这无异于打开了一个潘多拉的盒子，因为家庭的其他成员或者是朋友呢，有很多的秘密其实不想被别人知道，但是如果你没完没了的调查别人的这个秘密的话呢，有可能会造成关系的一些损伤。 So,everyone has secrets, so they don't want to share secrets with the other ones. Maybe this is this Pandora box cannot be opened by someone.
Yeah, I mean, it's possible that you could offend or you know, be offended by nosy relatives seeking information, or you know, they reveal aspects of parents' marriage maybe that have been kept secret for years. And there's an example given of a person who had a friend when mother died, found information that his sister was adopted. And that's the problem, isn't it? If you find out information about another member of the family, you think, oh, really? I didn't know that my sister really wasn't my blood relative. And do you tell them? Or some things are difficult to keep to yourself, but you know, do you have the right to tell other people if, you know, when they were born, you know, they weren't actually brought up by the parent, they were brought up by the grandmother? This is something that sometimes people aren't told, and it might be hurtful if they find out later in life that, you know, this is the true fact.
Italian winemaker eagerly wedded to centuries old traditions are slowly embracing Twitter, blogging, and Facebook to boost sales that have been hit by the global economic crisis. Italy, the world's second biggest wine producer after France, saw export sales drop 6% to 3.5 billion euros in 2009, hit by the crisis and advancing competition from the New World wines. And they said, in the times of crisis, it is important to experiment with new ways of making yourself known. Yeah, so they find Twitter, blogging, and Facebook is new way to, you know, there are more buyers with this kind of social media.
Yeah, and Susanna Crociani, her family owns Crociani, and they make a full-body red Tuscan wine. And Crociani says that she was the first Italian winemaker to start a blog in 2004. She said because of that blog, she's gained many new clients, not only individual wine lovers, but restaurant owners and professional buyers, after launching one of her social media pages. And she says an advantage of social media is that you don't have to pay for making yourself known. Obviously, you have to invest time. So yes. She says it does pay off, and she said this at Vin Italy, which is a wine trade fair, and She says that contacts through the social media have boosted Crociani's online sales, with the number of orders doubled to 50 or 60 a month, which is a considerable help for a small company which makes 60,000 or maybe 70,000 bottles of wine a year.
我们知道意大利呢，红酒非常的出名，它是仅次于法国第二大这个红酒的出口国家。但是呢，由于受到金融危机的影响，它的在2009年呢，整个销售业绩下降了6%。现在呢，很多这个年轻的红酒商呢，他们发现一个新的方法，能够使他们的红酒有更大的销量，就是通过叫做博客或者是social networking system 这种方式呢，就是现代的这种社交网站等等这种方式呢，来帮助他们销售他们的红酒。可以说呢是古老与现代的一种方式的结合。那很多人说呢，开了博客之后呢，或者这种微博的形式呢，能够方便他们更好的能够宣传自己的产品，特别呢是针对一些年轻的市场。因为很多年轻人他们喜欢喝啤酒或者其他的一些饮料，他们往往忽视了红酒的作用，所以通过这样的这种社交网站的方式呢，能够使大家特别是年轻人更加了解到红酒的一些好处。
That's very reasonable because young customers, they tend to favor beer or other kinds of drinks over wine. So through this kind of blogging or just social networking sites, they can help this, wine makers.
They can be attracted back to the wine drinking. Especially in Italy, more conservative producers prefer to stick to the traditional ways of promoting their business. But according to Crociani, Italian winemakers lag far behind US rivals in understanding the growing importance of social media. Is after all a new communication and marketing tool. However, the Italians, they are making first steps in this social media in particular. Hardcore traditionalists, they do reject the innovative communication in favor of personal contacts with clients. But then again, because of the tough times that a lot of countries have gone through recently, the social media community has created a kind of safety network, because fellow winemakers are able to exchange useful information and they even can pass on clients to each other.
那很多的这个红酒制造商呢，他们都与时俱进的开办了这样的一个社交网站，同时呢在自己的这个网站上呢开展了这样红酒博物馆，使大家能够通过这种 video 的形式来观看自己的这个红酒园区是怎么样产葡萄，怎么样来产红酒的。但是呢还有一些很传统的这个红酒商，他们说我们宁愿用传统的方式来销售我们的红酒，因为这是我们的历史，是我们的文化，是我们的传统。 People,
they also think, stick to their more traditional ways of promoting their business. They prefer people to visit their wineries or their, because they think it's part of their history, it's a part of their long tradition. So
I think that has such a long tradition, wine making and maybe the making of liqueurs in most countries in Europe. It's a place where tradition plays a very big part in things, but there's something called Ca del Bosco. They are makers of a bubbly, a sparkling wine in Italy, and they're due to launch a new multimedia website, cadelbosco.com, and they're going to invite clients to an interactive visit to their winery and the Franciacorta winemaking district in northern Italy. So this will be something for the future, which many European, we talk about Italy mainly, but I'm sure the French and Germans and the others will soon catch up with the methods that are obviously being used in a better way in the United States.
那刚才呢我们去的是意大利，现在呢来到另外一个红酒或者香槟产量大国呢，就是法国。
Makers of sparkling wines in Burgundy hope they can steal a march on their northern neighbors in Champagne and lure foreign buyers who have been finding the champagnes a bit expensive. Someone said, I have high hopes for US and Britain.
He said the rise in the value of single European currency, the euro, has been pushing up the price of champagne for drinkings in other markets, making Burgundy bubbly an attractive value for more tipple. And the price rise of champagne on many markets due to the euro could turn more buyers to other sparkling wines like Crémant.
Champagne, as maybe some people know, can only be made in the specific French region called Champagne, or Champagne in French, but it hasn't stopped vintners, winemakers in other areas to make sparkling wines too. They use the same methods as champagne makers have done from, ever since the time of a monk called Dom Pérignon, and they use yeast in the wine to create the sparkle. For example, there's Cava from Spain and Spumante from Italy. These are all white sparkling wines that taste more or less the same as the actual champagne from France. And champagne mostly matures in underground cellars, but there's a maker in France called Bailly-Lapierre, and they use a large cave in a rock next to a river called the Yonne River in France. And that cave was formerly a quarry. The thing is, with a lot of these wines, they need to be kept cool in a place that keeps the temperature constant, maybe 12 degrees, and it's very important to maintain the temperature during the time that the wine matures.
So because tastes differ, the winery make various sparkling wines depending on the selection of grapes and the dosage of the liquor. A sweet addition put in the wine before maturing and again before they are prepared for distribution. And the reserve is a combination of four grape. What is that? It's French, you know that.
Yeah, there's some people who know something about wine. They will know that there are some favorite grape types, Pinot Noir, Chardonnay, Gamay, Aligot. So these are the things that are often favoured. I think some of the Chardonnay grapes are used in China anyway. Rosé is very popular at the moment. It's a general trend in wines.
And someone said who is Bailly Lapierre. He's combining traditional production methods with modern marketing cloud, and it recently dropped its elaborate and traditional labels for a more pure and modern design. That the old client will come back, but to win new clients, you need to have a more modern image and not come across as a drink for older generations.
Yeah, well, certainly in Britain, I know that most drinks manufacturers, they're making most of their profit from the younger generation. So, you know, if people are wanting to sell their wine, these wine makers, they need to appeal to the younger market, because that's where most of the money is spent nowadays.
More than one in five Britons never eat at the table, and 85% admit to snacking mindlessly. This is according to a poll from England. People regularly fail to think about what they are eating, and many are piling on the pounds as a result. Of the 85% who admits to unconscious eating, most said boredom was the main trigger.
Yeah, eating to give themselves a treat was the second most common reason, followed by feeling depressed. TV watching was also a trigger for unconscious eating, while snacking in a bid to cheer yourself up came in fifth. Eating on weekends was the next most common reason, while in the seventh place was people enjoying me time. That's, you know, spending some quality time just indulging yourself. More than 60% of adults surveyed admit to eating too much, although three-quarters of those said that they wanted to lose weight.
那英国的一项最新的调查显示呢，五分之一以上的英国人呢从来不坐在餐桌前用餐，85%的人称呢承认自己 盲目进食。调查显示，人们往往不去想自己究竟在吃些什么，所以许多人因此而发胖。有85%的人称呢，多数人呢盲目进食呢是由于无聊造成的。那第二大原因呢是要犒劳自己，第三呢就是心情比较郁闷，所以他们才会选择吃东西。那盲目进食的第四大原因呢是看电视的时候就不知不觉的吃了很多东西。那第五大原因呢是吃东西会让自己变得非常的开心。
Yeah, so which one do you think you are?
Well, I try to eat regularly, and although I like to eat snacks and chocolate, I try to have that after I've eaten my regular meals. And so I try to have 5 or 6 hours between the three meals that I have each day. But I can see that, the trend with younger people, if they're playing computer games, they don't want to leave the computer, so they just bring food to their the place where they're playing the computer. And maybe some people find it very hard to leave the television or computer to go and sit at a table. I remember it was only about 10 years ago in England. I visited a family, a group of young people who were sharing a house together, and I was quite amazed they didn't have a table in the house. they sat and ate their food in front of the television or where they were playing their computer games. And I thought, in the kitchen, there's no place for a table, but even in the living room there was no table. But that's an increasing thing in houses. You don't expect now just to have people with a table. You don't need it. The old idea of traditional family lunch or family dinner has gone out of the window. People just aren't doing this so much.
Yeah, so for many young people, I think not only in Britain, but also for nowadays, any place you can find young people, they don't have time to, cook for themselves, just eat outside, and then they, got home to sleep or just work, but they never cook for themselves. They just went to their parents or, go to the restaurants.
But I think to say that you don't have time for it is getting back to the time management situation. Mm-hmm. You will have time. I mean, if you play computer games an hour less every day, you will have time to have regular meals. It's a social thing, isn't it? You'll lose out if you don't go and even if you just go to a restaurant. Eating with friends is important.
South Korea plans to cut off online video games at midnight for school-age children and allow parents to set limits on playing hours to curb problems of internet gaming addictions in the world's most wired country. The sensational case in March of parents whose infant daughters starved to death while they were playing games on the internet raised concerns in the country about gaming addiction and called on the government to act.
Yeah, well, that's terrible, isn't it? Allowing a little baby daughter to starve to death while you're playing computer games. They're terrible. Under the plan announced this week by South Korea's culture ministry, computer game companies were asked to put in place just voluntary restrictions by the end of this year for children that would also try to cut down on the hours adults play games. South Korea, which is one of the world's highest penetration rates for high-speed broadband connections at homes, is also saturated with PC rooms where gamers spend long hours in front of computer monitors. So I suppose it's something, if the parents can't drag themselves away from the computers, there's not much chance of setting a good example for the children, is there?
没错，那在韩国呢？韩国呢其实是科技非常发达的这样的一个国家，但是最近呢，韩国政府颁布了这样一条措施，就是允许父母们呢对自己的孩子玩网络游戏进行宵禁，就是他们可以规定孩子们玩网络游戏的这个时间，政府呢将会不加更多的干预。So, the policy provides a way for parents to supervise their children's gaming, game playing.So users can select a special server that gave them incentives for cutting down on their gaming time.
And the way that children will be denied access is that the internet gaming would be denied from midnight to about 8 o'clock for school-aged children. Mm-hmm. And several game providers have already set in place the regulations.
Yeah.
And to enforce the measures, government has asked game providers to monitor the national identity numbers of users to include their ages, and then it will allow parents to see if their IDs were used by children looking for ways to play after hours.
So, Paul, about this curfew, and I only know that in Western countries you have curfews for teenagers, like girls, you must come home before 12, and this kind of curfew is reasonable. So in your country, Britain, do you have this kind of things that regulate your children to, you know, you have certain period of time to play video games, or then you cannot play anymore?
No, I think South Korea has latched on to this, and I don't think the same thing is in place in Britain. I know that in America there are certain things that are used in televisions to stop the television being used after certain hours, so that's certainly something which is used in America. I don't think there's anything really in Britain that compares to that. But as so often with things that start off in America, they come and they're used in Britain several years later.
All right, and that was today's show. Hope you've enjoyed that, and we're going to see you tomorrow. Bye-bye.
Step one, you say we need to talk. He walks, you say sit down, it's just talk. Smiles politely back at you. You stare politely right on through. Some sort of window to your right. She goes left and you stay right. Swing the lines, there's blame. You begin to wonder why you came. Where did I go wrong? I lost a friend somewhere alone.
时间22:59，中央人民广播电台经济之声，让你永远领先一分钟。
Cookie 经济学，
欢迎来到 Cookie 经济学。今日茶点：凯尔特之虎（Celtic Tiger）。 最绿之岛爱尔兰曾因为经济落后被叫做欧洲的乞丐。1995年到2007年，爱尔兰大力发展软件业，实现了高增长、低通胀的快速发展，人均 GDP 排名世界第二，因此被摩根斯坦利公司誉为凯尔特之虎。但2008年的经济危机也令这只老虎遭受了重创。
瑞士伊波路表为您准点报。